Hi, and welcome to Five Compelling Questions with Sean. This is the podcast where we talk with authors and get to know them through a series of questions. Five official questions. Sometimes there's a lot more questions asked. You know, there are no rules, basically. Today, my guest is Jonathan Brown. Hey, Jonathan.
Sean Riley Simmons. Happy to be here. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I am fired up. I've been waiting 22 years to get on your podcast.
22 years, maybe like 22 weeks.
You know, I'm just ecstatic to be here.
That is a long time. Well, we met four or five years ago. I can't remember exactly. We met at in Toronto at BoucherCon.
Yep, BoucherCon Toronto. I believe it was in a bar, if I know me.
Well, that's that is shocking for me. Everyone knows that I would never be in a bar.
You're so sweet, because I was standing by your table and you invited me over to join your group, and I have never left your group.
That's right. We've been attached to the hip ever since.
That's right.
Well, yes, we do, and we do make sure we always run into each other every time we go to BoucherCon, which is fun. Yeah. Oh, so it's something to look forward to, and we've gotten to be very good friends, and that's great.
Oh yeah.
And it just continues on into the future. There's more things happening with us going forward, which is a lot of fun. So
that's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Well, for those who have not met you yet, I'm going to introduce you to the audience. Jonathan Brown writes the Lou Crusher mystery series published by Down and Out Books. His most recent Don't Shoot the Drummer was released in November of 2020. The previous book, The Big Crescendo, which I personally really loved. I love both of them, but I really love that book, was released in November of the year before. Jonathan is currently writing a standalone noir novel, and the working title is Chloe. And it's Chloe is a high school senior living in the small town of Bucksville, a fictitious town in Northern California, juggling the daily tolls of caring for an alcoholic mother and assisting the local sheriff whose troubled past has caught up with him. So you're not basing this on anyone that you know personally, right? You're not, this, her name isn't really Sean, the mother. You know.
Not at all.
And then you've also dipped into some nonfiction. So Character Is What Counts, a novel based on the life of Vince Lombardi, mm-hmm. is your second historical fiction book for Mentors.
That's correct.
And you also wrote A Boxing Trainer's Journey, a novel based on the life of Angelo Dundee. And Angelo Dundee was he?
He was Muhammad Ali's boxing trainer.
Right. That's cool.
Sugar Ray Leonard, and then later on George Foreman when he came out of retirement.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, when he came back at 40 years old, he hooked up with Angelo, and he actually won the title.
Oh, wow. So this guy knows what he's, this guy was very prominent in that field, obviously.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
He was the one you called if you needed some training. And so now you're a musician. You're a drummer.
Yes.
And you do a lot of, we were just talking before about how much we love music. So you're a musician and you and your high school rock band mate have partnered to create an audiobook company, which is super awesome and fun and cool.
That's true. Brent Halfyard, he's a bass player, and we were the rock and roll rhythm section a million years ago, back in the high school days.
Hey, it was just the 80s. It wasn't that long ago.
Okay. Yeah, it was the 80s.
We're the same age.
Yeah.
Roughly. So Jonathan and his lovely wife, who I adore, that you live in sunny California, which everyone's very jealous of. And you also are a personal fitness trainer. What are you up to? You teach drums and you do physical, and you work out and you train people.
I have to say that the drum lessons are tapering off, and that's due to, well, you would know this better. The generation coming up now is not as excited to pick up instruments and put bands together and play. They either get to their computer and make beats if they want to get into rap or that kind of thing, or hip hop, or they're into video games, Fortnite and all that stuff. Not that we were heroes. I mean, we picked up instruments so we could meet girls. I mean, there's no denying it. But I started teaching in the year 2000, and I had 70 students a week working out of a store.
Wow.
And I'm down to, you know, maybe a dozen. And it's just this generation, like the music is different. You know, live music, when I moved to LA in the 90s, there were a ton of live music bars, and then they switched to DJ, and then they're just espresso and frappuccino. So it's just the whole era is changed. And now people buy or download one song at a time. It's not like they're buying albums and all that stuff. So
yeah, I've totally noticed that phenomenon. And some people will just like, you'll wake up and somebody just dropped a single, you know, the night before, like, you know, Taylor Swift's like, oh, another song came out. I'm like, what? Because I remember having to go to the store and buy like the vinyl, and I still have a huge vinyl collection.
Oh yeah. We not only lined up for concerts, we would line up at Tower Records if we knew a record was coming out.
Yeah. Oh, ooh. I know. I love Tower Records. Well, yeah. I love music, and I totally understand what you're saying about the those kids today.
I never thought I'd sound like that, but here I am.
I say that kind of stuff too, and I'm like, oh my God, am I getting like, you know, 100 years old? But it's a different dynamic socially, and you know, they can connect with each other. Just like we were just saying, like you had to go to the store and stand in line and wait, and hopefully they had the thing that you wanted.
Yeah.
And, you know, and if they didn't, you were out of luck. And now it's like everything we need is just I would like the song right now. Please give it to me for free. You know, I mean, it's never for free because, well, we subscribe to, in our house, we have Sirius Radio.
Yeah.
And we also have Amazon Music. So it's everything, every song I ever want, if I want to go out for a run, I just put together a playlist of like my 20 songs I feel like hearing at that moment.
Uh-huh.
And I remember I grew up in Florida and I would lay on the beach and you had to sit by the radio and wait for your favorite song to come on. And like, you didn't want to go swimming until that song. And then you could go because you knew.
Yep. And I was the obnoxious guy in the 80s with the big boom box on the shoulder. But where everyone was into, you know, rap and all that stuff, I was, since I'm Canadian, I was listening to the rock band Rush. And that was not everyone's favorite band.
Yeah, that's can be an aggressive sound if you're not ready for it.
What are you gonna do?
I love Rush too.
It was a different time.
Yeah, I still listen to Rush. I'm a rock and roll girl. Yeah.
See, we're so simpatico. Look at that.
I know, we have a lot in common. I'm not from Canada, but so many of my friends are though. It's kind of weird. Mm-hmm. Well, that's very cool. Well, so you've mostly, you're writing now, but you're doing all these other things, but.
Yeah, when I saw the, pun intended, writing on the wall with music, that's when I started dipping my, the quill into the ink of crime fiction.
Mm-hmm. And we're so glad that you did, because you're a wonderful writer.
Oh, thank you. And I love it. And I love, I gotta say, nothing against the music community, the writing community, at least the crime writers, they're so supportive of each other. And that was a pleasant surprise. Like rock and roll, you have to bring attitude. Sometimes there's competition between bands, which never made sense. Like there's so much music for all of us. I didn't understand the competitive side.
Yeah.
But sometimes, you know, you'd be backstage, like, we're going to kick the, you know what, out of that band tonight, man. It's like, well, why don't we just play our tunes and then rock and have a couple of beers when we're done?
It's a very Canadian view of the world.
Exactly.
Yeah, but it's so true because it is so competitive, and it's like no one sits and listens to the same song over and over and over again all day long. Of course, there should be more, but I mean, maybe if you're a serial killer, you do. I don't know. That's what they do.
Exactly. So I just find these writers so helpful to each other, and so I love that. I really love
it. Yeah, and you don't have to wear like ripped clothes when you go places or like make your hair pink. You can just like show up in your normal clothes and be like, I wrote something. Oh, okay, come on in.
Well, like, have to look exactly. Cool. And like when we were talking off air, I was so glad, and you said you loved when grunge came along. I was so happy because I was in bands where the guys would be wearing eyeliner and I refused. I was never putting makeup on. And then grunge came along, you didn't have to.
Yeah, you could just be your
okay.
Yeah, the more natural you look, the better. Like, please don't wash your hair. That's the best thing.
Yeah, that's about it.
Don't wash your hair, wear your grandparents' clothes, and like rip them up, and you're all set.
And then play some Nirvana and Soundgarden, and you're good to go.
Hey, you know, that's it. That's how you get the girls back then. But I cannot picture you in eyeliner.
Well, you good, because I never did. We would have photo shoots and all the guys are moosing and teasing their hair and then doing the eyeliner. And I would always sit around with the photographer and we would just, you know, BS while the guys, air quotes, were getting ready for the friggin' photo shoot. I'm like, oh, you gotta be kidding me.
Hey, you know, and it's a cool look if you can pull it off, but I just can't see it for you. But I mean, you know, hey, I love Ziggy Stardust too. So, you know, but.
Oh yeah, yeah, no, that's true.
There's something to be said for it, but it's like, it doesn't fit every face, I guess.
Oh yeah, and when I was 10 years old, I loved Alice Cooper, so.
Oh, yeah.
And my mother wouldn't let me go to his concert, so I wouldn't talk to her for a day. hey, you gotta make a stand. I stood my ground.
Hey, that's your protest. You were rocking from 10 years old. You're like, this is what I want to be. I'm doing this. Let me go.
Yeah. But if I wanted breakfast the next day, I had to start talking to mom again. So
yeah, moms are important. Moms bring the food and the comfort and the driving of the place, driving you to places. That's what I'm learning now.
I wanted her to drive me to Alice Cooper.
Well, my first concert was Prince. And I saw him when I was 15. I think I was 15. But I was like a young, I think I was, yeah, I was definitely 15 because I couldn't drive. Not that I would be allowed to anyway. So my mom said, yeah, you can go, but a parent has to drive you and hang out there and drive you home. And it's like, and it won't be me. So you have two jobs. You have to find a friend that will go with you. And also that has a parent that will do this for you because she's like, I can't be out in DC all night. You know, she had to get up for work or whatever. Wow. And I'm like, man, but I found that friend and he had a cool mom and she sat in the parents' room and knitted or something the whole time we were at the Prince concert. And it was the love sexy tour. It's kind of simulating sexual acts and Sheila E. came out in her bikini and she's playing drums. And
oh yeah.
I was like, oh yeah, my mom would not probably like this a lot. I'm glad my mom wasn't the one that came because she would be like, let's get out of here. But it was awesome. I'll never forget it. It was a great concert.
Yeah.
You always remember your first concert. Yeah. Well, maybe we should get into the writing questions, but I mean, I could talk to you all day long because often we do.
Okay.
We've gotten together for a couple of virtual cocktail dues during this lockdown. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like we started them up last summer and we haven't done one recently, but we will.
Yeah.
We will again. So writing questions. Number one, if you could tell your younger writing self anything, what would it be?
I would say young Jonathan. You can continue to love beer as much as you do, but you have to exercise a lot. But as far as writing, I'd say, and this would be key. I'd say you don't have to have a degree in a bachelor's in English or a journalism degree, or because keep in mind, I was coming up in the 80s and the only people that got published usually had degrees. And then the only publishers were the big five, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I didn't even give it a shot. Yeah, sure, I was focused on music, but I had a lot of ideas tumbling around in my head, but absolutely no confidence at all.
Yeah.
And so I would say, hey man, just pick up the pen or open up that DOS program on your computer, whatever it was.
You had a computer?
Yeah, on the electric typewriter. And type the story out and, you know, find those around you who are better writers than you and figure it out. But there's a lot. It's just, it was done a certain way. And then there was no self-publishing. That was not even when self-publishing started, it was criticized and frowned upon, as I'm sure you remember.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, don't listen to everybody, just write, just be a storyteller and keep at it until the world changes.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so interesting because the two worlds that you've been in, speaking about the big five, and there was no medium sized presses or small presses, or if they were, nobody really could, you couldn't figure out where they were, who they were. But music, the cooler music was always the independent labels, like the people that were doing it on their own, you know? And then it was like the canned music that we were supposed to be listening to. It was just so much the same. It seemed like in the 80s.
And they wouldn't let anyone in. Really.
Yeah. So it was like the flip flop of that. Like the cool music was the one you had to go out and find, and it wasn't freshly produced and, you know, that kind of thing. So.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So that was that was just a weird, but that's just, you know, the old guard trying to keep new people out. That's all it is. That happens everywhere.
So that's what I would tell my younger self.
Yeah. Just don't worry, things are going to get better. Keep going.
Yeah, yeah.
So, second question. When did you first realize that words have power, that something you wrote had an impact on someone or a situation?
Okay. It was long before my wife, in the early 90s, and I had a date set with this woman, and we were going to talk around 6 o'clock. So this is before cell phones. I think we had pagers, and I didn't hear anything. 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 7:30, didn't hear anything. I was living in West Hollywood, and she was living in Santa Monica. And Christmas was around the corner, and I was a broke musician, and I had 5 nieces and nephews to buy gifts for, and I could not think of what to get them. So I'm, you know, checking the clock, and then figure, okay, this date's not happening. And I thought, oh, I know what I'll do. I'll write a short story, a children's story, and I'll put all of them in it and make them superheroes. And I'd never done anything like that before, but once I started, you know, the muse was there. I just could not stop writing this short story. And I was digging it. And then come 9:30, 10 o'clock, she called to say, sorry, I didn't call earlier. I had to take my mother to the hospital. She's okay. I'm back home now. Would you like to stop by? So again, I'm in West Hollywood. She's in, even in those days, it's going to be 45 minutes or something like that. But I was in bed writing the story. And yeah, a real rocker, right? Writing a kid's story. And I said, well, can we just like take a rain check? Because, you know, I'm writing the story for my niece and nephews. It's going to be, it's all I can give them for Christmas. And she said, well, it'd be really nice if you came over. And I said, okay, so can we just take a rain check? Because I'm really right. I was not hearing what she was saying at all. So I wrote the story. Later on, gave it to my nieces and nephews, and they loved it. They absolutely loved it. And even a month ago, my niece now, who's, her name's Catherine, she's the eldest one. She's 30, 35, 36. She brought up that story. She remembers it. that's so cute. When I thought, wow. I mean, I just made their day, and they remembered the story. And just to put a book in on the other story with the date, we got together like a few days later and went for a walk. And she had given me that book. Do you remember Women Are From Venus and Men Are From Mars? Mm-hmm. And she wanted me to read it. And I skimmed through it and I thought, well, this is all the obvious stuff. So I didn't read the book. And she said, did you ever read that book? And I said, no. And she said, well, if you'd read it, you would know that when I called you, I really needed you to come over. Like any one of my girlfriends would have known that. And I said to her, well, if you know I haven't read it, you know I wouldn't know that you really wanted me to come over. And now this is the funny part. At the time, she was, I think, a third degree black belt in Aikido, and she had trained with Steven Seagal, and she trained in Asia and all this stuff. And she made this really fast move toward me, and she said, you know, don't give me that bull crap or whatever, right? And then again, we'd only been on 2 or 3 dates. So I guess I got in a defensive fighting stance. She goes, what are you doing? She goes, are you in a fighting stance? And I go, no, maybe. She goes, do you think I'm going to hit you? I said, well, I don't know. But if you do, I know you might kill me. So anyway, so we both ended up laughing about it. And we continued dating. But I still did not read the book.
Yeah. Well, I would have been like, well, why don't you call one of your girlfriends then if you know that?
That was up there. That was up there in the head, but I didn't say it. But the power of the words was how much it meant to my nieces. And that's when you're a broke musician and you save all that money.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That was even so.
I love that. Yeah,
they were demanding a sequel, too.
Yeah, I'm surprised you didn't do one every year for them, you know.
Yeah, huh? I think I went back to rock and roll and was trying to be a rock star.
That's your one. I don't want to spoil it, but you know, the second movie is always never as good as the first one.
right.
I would have named the bad guy after her for standing me up.
right.
Because I'm all about revenge. So, how did you arrive at the premise of your series? And you're going to talk about your Crasher series, right?
Oh, Lou Crasher, yeah.
Yeah, how did you arrive at the premise? And so tell us a little bit about Lou and then
Lou is a, in the music world, he's like a gun for hire. So different bands, when they need a drummer to fill in for their regular drummer, or they have a session in the studio, they call you up and you, what What I really liked, and what Lou likes, is you get a lot of variety of music. It's a challenge because you have to learn music very quickly and you have to play it the way the band leader wants it done. And then they give you your, you know, $50-$100 and then you go on your way. So Lou, that's what Lou's doing in Los Angeles. And meanwhile, at some point he falls for a gal and bends over backwards just to do anything for her to get the girl. And then he finds himself, he stumbles into the PI business and becomes a bit of an amateur PI. So that happens in the big crescendo. Mm-hmm. And it carries on in Don't Shoot the Drummer. And that was easy for me to come up with Lou, because that's, once I got out of music school, I went to the Musicians Institute of Technology in Hollywood. I stuck around LA, originally from Vancouver. I stuck around Los Angeles, and that's what I did. I was a gun for hire, and I got a ton of work. Some of it on ability, but most of it on the fact that I showed up when I said I would show up. I mean, there were so many flakes that I got so much work. I remember I was in worked with six different bands at once at one point.
Wow.
So my drums kind of just stayed in my car. Mm-hmm. And I would go to these rehearsals and go to gigs. And so, you know, my playing chops went through the roof. And what happens is you meet so many characters, and musicians don't just have one personality. They have all personalities. And so I just really, that's where I got to study character and characters, is meeting all these musicians and then cocktail waitresses and managers and road managers and all that stuff. So that's how I came up with the premise. Is also Lou's working at a rehearsal studio where bands come and practice. Mm-hmm. And that's also what I did. So that's also how I got a lot of work, is because bands that would show up for months at a time getting ready for a gig, and then they'd show up and say, "We lost our drummer. You play drums, can you fill in?" And you hear them rehearsing week after week, so you know the songs.
Yeah.
And they're like, "Oh wow, dude, I can't believe how quickly you learn the songs." I'm like, "I'm outside the door every night you rehearse." So that's how I came up with the premise. And so yeah, Lou agrees to try to find some stolen equipment, and then it just escalates and escalates. And then Don't Shoot the Drummer, he's sort of taking to the amateur PI stuff because he's got a bit of a knack for it. Mm-hmm. And but he insists on having one foot in rock and roll and the other foot in the amateur PI stuff. So that's a conflict that he has to try to figure out, as well as solving the case, or cases as they may be.
Right. Yeah. Well, he's a fun guy. It's just a really cool setup, you know. Cool. There's so many different scenarios he could find himself in with that premise, yeah. You know. And you've got the experience. So
yeah.
I think it's hilarious that you got work because you're like the responsible rock and roll person. I will show up and then I will get the work.
Yeah. I got asked so many times. Well, first of all, I was always asked, "Where are you from?" because I'd hear the Canadian accent. And the other question was, there was two questions. "Dude, were you in the military, or dude, were you ever a cop? Because you're so on time." Like, well, the rehearsal's at 8. Shouldn't I be here at friggin' 8? I don't get it. But hey, I got the gigs.
No, you're supposed to be drunk and then, you know, maybe show up the next day and get mad and throw the stuff around. I mean, that's what I've seen in the movies. I don't know.
Yeah. That's the day after.
Yeah, right. So have you played with any bands that we've heard of? Or who's the most famous band you played with?
Probably not, but I did get, you know, you have the Grammys in the States, Canada has the Juno Awards, and I was with the world music band that we won a Juno one year.
Cool.
I think it was 98 or, yeah, 1998, nice. For best all-around world music band. So that was cool because I played on that album and it was cool. And then I played with a guy named Bobby Curtola, and he was sort of like a Canadian Tom Jones.
Yeah, I've heard his name before. I know that name. Yeah.
Yeah, and that was a lot of fun. Like he was making a comeback, so I played with him on the comeback tour, and we toured across Canada a couple of times, and it was an absolute blast.
Fun.
That was the first time I got to experience a tour bus. It was an old bus, but it was awesome because before that it was always, you know, six guys in a van or whatever.
Yeah.
And I did all the driving.
Yeah, because you're the responsible one.
Well, the responsible one, I dug it. You know, I really enjoyed the driving.
Well, that's good. That's unique. I think also unique to the music industry. Houston would be in the back of the bus. My grandmother loved Tom Jones, and I always think it's so funny because my grandmother never mentioned, she never noticed other men besides my grandfather, you know. And it's like very fairy tale romance, you know, sure. Love okay. for each other. And they were very cute, and they just, you know. And then one time he had passed away, and I was at her house, and she said, he came on the TV. I think it was when he was doing Prince. He redid that song, you know, Kiss.
Oh, yeah, Kiss. Yeah.
And she's like, well, he's just so attractive. And I was like, Grandma, stop.
Yeah, I remember he had a video to that song too.
Oh yeah, I think she was watching it all the time. So that was his. She was digging him. I'm like, that is the weirdest thing you've ever said.
That's funny.
Yeah, she was a lot of fun. That made me laugh. I've never forgotten it because she never ever said anything like that ever again. So Tom Jones, he did it for her.
There you go.
Yeah, you know, you never know. Has anything you've written ever surprised you? In other words, have you had no idea something was going to happen and it just showed up as you were writing?
Yeah, two things. On the large scale, when I took on that Angelo Dundee book, because I, you know, pictured myself and fancied myself just a crime fiction writer, and I was still trying to become a better crime fiction writer. And you know what, still am. But a guitar player buddy of mine worked at Mentoris, and they said, hey, they're going to do these stories on famous Italians and Italian Americans. He goes, and I put your name in. I said, don't put my name in. I don't write that stuff. And he said, oh, don't worry, dude, you're a writer. You'll kill it. I'm like, oh, okay, you're a writer. Yes. That means we can write everything, right?
I can barely write tickets, recipes, yeah, exactly. Directions to the gym.
So when that they said they wanted basically a lengthy outline of what you're going to do, and I did that. Though actually the first one I sent, they said that's not nearly long enough, but then they sent me a sample of one of their other books. So I went back, and 3 months later I came up with the outline. They dug it and they said go for it, and I still didn't really know where I was going, but through the research and getting to know Angelo, I just started telling his story, and it's fiction, loosely based on, so fact and fiction in a story. Mm-hmm. And so that entire book surprised me because I'd never done anything like that. And, you know, they paid well. So you there's anxiety there that somebody's paying you.
Yeah, gotta show up.
Give you the advance, and I'm like, oh, okay, I can't touch that advance. But that lasted about a week. And then I'm like, okay, I gotta write the book now. But on the smaller scale, my first two self-published books, which were early Crasher books, which I've tried to take down from Amazon, and Amazon keeps putting them back up.
They'll be there forever.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't really have any sex scenes in there. And I remember working with an editor, and she said, when's Crasher gonna, you know, get his groove on? And I said, you know what, I don't know. And I kind of started stammering, and I started getting nervous. And then I realized I never wrote a sex scene while my mother was still alive.
All you got to do is picture Tom Jones. And
I did not want my mother reading my words. And
right.
So when she passed, and then I kept writing, I thought, okay, let me give this a shot. And wrote a sex scene. And I thought it was really good. And it wasn't that hard to write. Mm-hmm. And even my wife said, hey, good job.
Well, I was going to say, you are a married man. You're a man of the world, right?
Yeah, so.
It can sound really kind of weird, though. So it's a skill, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Did you start writing those right off the bat? With your character and
with my culinary traditional mysteries? No, I didn't. Yeah. No, I didn't write a lot of sex scenes for those.
Well, yeah. Come on, let's get there.
Yeah, she wrote a recipe and then she went and off it. No, that didn't happen. She is, you know, she has a serious person that she's with, but it's always off the page.
It's always off. Always off the page. I like that. Yeah,
but to be honest, I wrote one just for myself. Because I just had to have them do it so I could have it in my head that that it had happened when they first met. Yeah. I think it was the first or second book, and I was just had to write it, and I just threw it away. But then it was in my mind that they had gone to that level in their relationship as the writer, but I didn't share that with the world.
I think you should hit that share button like they have in social media. Share that section. Yeah, let's go.
So awkward.
You're worried that your son's going to read it. That's the problem, right?
I'm worried anyone's going to read it. My mom, everyone is still alive. Except my grandmother, God rest her soul, Tom right. Jones fan. She's not there. I wouldn't want her to see it, but my mom's pretty chill. She was a hippie in the Yeah, she was a big old hippie back in the 60s and 70s. I don't think she would care.
Okay.
Yeah, my mom was the one that my friends would come over to my house and ask her questions about sex, and I just wanted to crawl under the couch and die.
Hey, the free love era. You should have your mom write the sex scene for you.
Oh yeah, she'd probably be like, let me do it. It was like a lifetime of embarrassment. Like my friends would come over. She would just like asking very personal questions to my friends, and then they would come over and ask my mom stuff. Like, am I supposed to feel it? I'm like, oh my God. Yeah, but yeah, we never had to wonder about anything. my mom would just lay it out for us really early because she said my mom, nobody'd ever talked to me about this stuff.
Right.
And I didn't know what was supposed to happen. I didn't know anything. So I was like, well, you made up for it with my sister and I. So it was like, she'd get you in the car, like on the way home. And she'd be like, so, I'm not going to say what she said, but it was always like really uncomfortable. And my sister and I would just be, trying to slide down the seats, talking about boy parts and stuff. I don't know. Oh my God. I love my mom. She made me who I am. That's why my sister and I are so like sardonic and have such a crazy sense of humor, because we've been tortured our whole lives by that woman. No, she's great. So fifth question is always a little something off the wall. Mm. We try to make it something different. You talked a little bit about it already though. What experiences from your personal life have wound up in your fiction? So now you got to think of something else besides the drumming, or I can ask you another thing.
Oh no, I got something.
Okay, good.
And I think it showed up in my second book, which I'm trying to wipe from the slate, but it may come up later. So my character, Lou Crasher, drives a red 65 Mustang.
Oh yeah.
And I had a 65 Mustang.
Nice.
And I was rehearsing with a band. This is real life. I was rehearsing with a band, and the guy that ran the rehearsal studio came running in and he says, do any of you own a red Mustang? And I knew I wasn't parked illegally. My heart sank because I knew something had happened to my car. I came outside and there's a crowd of people around and there's the fire department and it's completely up in flames.
Oh my, I remember that from the book.
Yeah.
I remember that scene. I remember the scene. I wasn't there in California.
Right. And I remember the first thing my first thought was, oh my God, is this hot? Because I was probably still 20 feet away. Back with everyone. But then I kind of pushed through the crowd and I stood beside the fire, not the fire chief, but the main fire guy who was, they're sort of, the fire guys were putting out the car. And then the next row was just this one fireman. And I stood beside him. He goes, sir, you need to go back. But I said, no, that's my car. And he goes, oh, okay. So we just stood there and I said, holy F, is this hot? Like, that's one thing you can't get, you don't see in movies. Mm-hmm. You can't really tell. Like, we've all been beside bonfires, we'll multiply that by 10.
Mm, yeah.
And then, so that really sucked. And I remember the next day waking up and hoping it's a dream. And I look out off my balcony, because they towed the car to my place. Like, no, it's completely burnt out. And I got some calls from friends saying, sorry, heard about what happened to your car. And I'm always trying to be, the pint of beer is half full, not half empty. And so I said, well, number one, my drums weren't in it when it happened. And number two, I wasn't in it when it happened. So I still got my drums. I'm still here. And yeah, but I felt sorry for the car, almost like it was a person. Like, yeah. Sorry, I couldn't, because, I would have kicked the you-know-what if I had out of someone. Because it turned out when they towed the car away, there's a bunch of matches on the ground, so somebody lit the car on fire.
It was arson.
And then the fire marshal Bill or whatever asked me, do you have any enemies? And I said, well, this is the era of road rage. I may have cut someone off and not known it. I've said, but no. And there's a crowd of people around. And so I started to really get pissed off. And I said, let me guess, nobody saw anything? Nobody saw anything. And then nobody said anything. But I really felt that the guy was there watching his handiwork.
Oh, probably. I think that's part of the deal when you're doing arson. I think watching it is part of it.
Yeah. And I said that to the fire guy later. And he goes, oh, yeah, I'm sure he's here right now. I said, oh, yeah. Can't we flush him out somehow? Like,
so it was probably the fire guy. It was probably
yeah. How'd they get there so fast?
I know. It was me all along.
So yeah, so that made it into one of my books. I can't remember which one.
Yeah, I remember reading it in some one book. Because I've read most of your things, and I remember the car. I thought I remember there was an incident with the car. Maybe I'm misremembering enough, but I do remember the car.
Yeah. So books,
but yeah, my step grandfather was from Ireland, and he came over from Ireland, and he lived in New York, and he was a firefighter in New York City, and he was in, you know, Hell's Kitchen mostly, and that was back in the day where they're like, okay, here's like a jacket, okay, good luck. go put that out with no hoses. Yeah, I don't know what they even used. It was like they had nothing.
Walk toward the flame and put that out, would you?
Right, yeah. So he was injured on the job, and so he didn't do it for real long because a few years, but then he got injured. He got, you know, like he was always saying, well, I broke both my legs and my arms and shattered my pelvis and my back. And so I got 75% of my pen, you know, I got to go out on 75%. Like that was like, he was really excited about that. he didn't have to wait till he was like 40 to retire. He retired in his 20s and
he fall through a collapsed roof or something?
It was a wooden fire escape. And then he was tethered to another guy. And the fire escape gave way, and it crashed like five times down. So like writing it down basically, and it was just collapsing. So each time it was like jarring to them, and I don't think the other guy made it. So
and did you the PI in me heard something? Did you say it was a wooden fire escape?
Yeah, so, yeah. Let's go stand on some burning wood and try to fight a fire.
Right. I guess that's when we moved to metal the next year.
Yeah, because it was like I think it was in the tenement area, you know, like in Hell's Kitchen. So yeah, it wasn't it was what he did. So I mean he was standing right up next to it, and like, you know, I watched Rescue Me is one of my favorite shows, and
oh, loved Rescue Me.
Yeah. So they have like all this gear and like masks and things. I'm like just back then it was like, okay, I guess maybe we have a baseball, like a hat for you, and you know, maybe a jacket. Go ahead. And then be careful.
You might be coughing for a few days after the fire, but you know,
yeah, they're like handing buckets to each other to take up the stairs. I don't know what they were up to. It was a long time ago. It was long, obviously a very long time ago. But yeah, so that was that. But well, those were very good answers to my questions. I think you passed you passed your pop quiz. Oh, this is the pop quiz. That was the test. This is a pop quiz.
Okay. I used to hate those. This one was fun.
Well, here's another one. So see if you like this. I don't know.
Okay.
So number one, beach or mountains?
Did you say beach or mountains?
Mm-hmm. What would you choose?
Beach, I guess. Oh, God, that's pretty close though.
Yeah. Well, these are all just to uncover more of your personality. Mm-hmm. Cake or pie? And you work out a lot, so you have to be very careful here. Cake or pie?
Oh, it's pie, baby doll. It's pie.
Pie? Mm-hmm. Are you a morning person or a night owl?
It's funny. I'm all of it now. Because the musician in me was the night owl. Mm-hmm. And the construction worker, because I always had to have a day job, which was usually construction, was the day. So I'm all of it.
Cool. When do you get most of your writing done?
Now it's early morning, late morning, afternoon.
Okay, so you're all over the place.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly.
Whenever I can. Dogs or cats?
Jeez, I was a cat guy for a long time, and I'm still a big cat guy, you know, tigers and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I think dogs, I guess.
Yeah. You don't own a big cat, do you? Like in your house?
Not yet.
It's not a cougar in your house. Don't do that.
No.
We've all seen the documentary. It's not a good
idea. We've all seen the, oh, couldn't take my eyes off that documentary.
Oh my God. That came out like right around the time of when the lockdown came. Like it seemed like Tiger King was on right around that time. We were all stuck at home. Like, oh, I guess we're going to be stuck at home for a few months. And then here we are a year later. Oh, and yeah. We watched it too. We watched it twice.
Well, I felt sorry for my wife because that whole week I was doing an impression of what's the Tiger King's voice. And she's okay, enough.
Joe Exotic? Yeah. Nobody wants to live with Joe Exotic.
Joe Exotic, exactly.
Not even those cats. Coffee or tea?
Oh, coffee. I'm a coffee guy.
Yeah, me too. I like coffee. So what is coming up next for you? What's going on? You said you're working on Chloe. What's going on with that?
I'm loving the book I'm writing for you guys, Chloe. And that's, we are calling this 3-book deal. I don't know if you saw the contract. I'm sure you did.
I always hear about them like in the hallway. I'm like, did that thing happen? Yeah, that thing happened. Okay, that's what I don't get involved.
The Badass Women series. And they're not connected, 3 separate standalones where women overcome and they kick ass.
Yeah, that's why you decided to bring it to me.
I brought it to you. Exactly.
It's really about me. No kidding. Everything's about me. No, it's not.
And I'm really enjoying writing the story. And I've been reading, once my first draft's done, I'll read paragraphs here and there to my wife, but then I'll give the first draft to her. Mm-hmm. And she's been really excited with what I've been reading her.
Awesome. Well, she's got great taste. So
yes,
anything she likes, I'm like, okay, we're doing that. She's a wonderful person. And what's going on with the audiobook company?
The audiobook, thanks for asking. Yeah, so I'm heading up the LA office and Brent Halfyard is Vancouver. And we're gonna be a one-stop shop for audiobooks. So we're gonna have everything from distribution to narrators, editors, quality control, all of it. And there's, different packages depending on what you want. So I narrated my Angelo Dundee book, just finished that. So Ooh. That should be live and over the internet. I don't know, 8 weeks, 6-8 weeks from now.
Nice.
And they've given me the go ahead to do my Vince Lombardi book, which is cool.
Very cool.
And then, as you know, we had a lovely Zoom meeting with you and Verena. So we're going to be doing some level best books.
Partnering Woo-hoo! Up. Yeah, that's going to be fun.
So that's what's happening there. And we're already making a lot of great contacts.
Nice. Well, I think audio is the thing, everybody mm-hmm. wants to listen and podcasts are huge. And just, I think, we were talking about everyone being connected all the time, but sometimes it's, you can't find the time to sit down and read a book all the time. So you want to put it, but you don't want to you want to go for weeks without reading something.
Right.
So you put it in your ears and you go on the treadmill and you're getting both things done, it's hard to read on treadmill. It is. I've tried it. It's like, first of all, I look like a giant nerd and I'm not, it's too bouncy. I can't read.
Yeah.
I'm giving myself a headache. So I have to listen to something. But
that's great because I have a long list of buddies who claim that they don't read. But now when the audiobooks come out, say, hey, you better pick this up.
Yeah. Because it's not really reading.
Yeah, exactly. You better listen to my story.
Right. Exactly. There's no excuse whatsoever. You have ears. I've seen them.
Right.
Cool.
Yeah, so we're calling our company Sidecrow Productions, and Sidecrow is an advanced yoga pose.
Right.
And it's not that we both do a ton of yoga, but we're not like yogis by definition, like what you'd see in a, let me leave that alone. But it's a pose that Brent can, it's a tough pose, but he can do it. I can't see myself ever doing it, but so he gives me a hard time about, he goes, hey, if that's going to be our name, you got to get it. But I kept calling him Sidecrow. And then we call each other and he called me, what's up, Sidecrow? And then I said, we should call our company Sidecrow. And he's an artist. So he's doing the logo because he's a crazy good artist.
Nice.
Very talented.
So. I love that name. That's cool. I can do regular crow.
Yeah, I can do regular crow.
Yeah, a lot of people can. Yeah, I don't, but Sidecrow, my yoga instructor can, because she can mm-hmm. do everything.
Right.
No, I love her. But I'm like, it's annoying sometimes. You're like, oh my God, really? I can't do that.
So when I turned 55 in November, and I put myself on a yoga challenge, which is the third time. Two other times I did 100 straight days of yoga, and now I'm doing, I want to do 365 days, which started back in November. So today was a day 151.
Nice.
Yeah. And so some of my clients are like, oh, cool. How do you feel? I'm like, still useless at yoga.
That's why they call it a practice.
It's a practice. Yeah.
It's not a thing you can ever get to be the best at, I guess. That's what they say.
And although I don't judge, I do swear at times.
I love my lady, because she's like, as long as you're in here breathing, you're doing yoga. I'm like, sweet, because I'm just going to sit here and breathe for a little while because I'm dying. I'm breathing. I'm doing yoga. Thank you.
I met a writer who had an event, and she was a yoga instructor. And I said, oh, that would be like a bucket list thing. I'd always wanted to be a yoga instructor, but it's never going to happen because of, and she goes, oh, of course it can. I said, no. My level of flexibility and all that stuff, it's not getting better as I get older. I know. And she goes, well, you don't have to be, like, yoga is a state of mind. If you're a full on yogi, I mean, you can do it. I'm like, no. If anyone's going to listen to me in class, they're going to see, like, why should we do what you can't do?
they're almost built like they're like rubber bands instead of joints. And then you watch them up there on the stage, there's a little stage at my place. And I'm like, I couldn't do that when I was like five, much less now, you know. I mean, I work towards it. I mean, that's the game. You work towards it, you practice, you get it. And I think that's the journey is what you're supposed to be. It's not, once I realized it's more of a journey than an endpoint, then I was like, oh, okay, I'm getting better at this. And I couldn't do crow for like a year, and then I could finally do it. So I was always afraid I was going to break my nose open, you know.
Well, where it really helps for me is I know that, I would definitely have more aches and pains in the morning when I got up if I didn't do yoga.
Yeah.
And I still, even though my wife tells me I should stop, I still like doing cartwheels. And I'll still kick the heavy bag and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I don't think I could do any of that stuff if I wasn't doing yoga. So.
Yeah. It all informs each other. You know, definitely. Yep. You should. I don't think anyone should just always do one thing.
Yeah.
Exactly. Definitely not those yoga people, but they sound like they're all from the same school of thought, though. Like, you can do it, it's fine. They're like in a different plane of like reality where I'm like, no, I cannot do that, but thank you for thinking I can.
Well, I end up doing it through YouTube with a lot of different but there's a handful of instructors I like, and I always laugh when they ask the question at the beginning of the workout, just come up with an intention for your practice. And it's, for me, it's just to make it through. That's the intention.
To not break my neck. That's what I'm
think about your yeah, exactly.
Not look like a complete idiot in front of 15 other people.
Yeah.
Falling, I try to still not to fall down during, and it's funny because I'll just almost fall down during like an easy thing. And I'm like, the hard stuff, I'm okay. And then I'm like, oh, you know, warrior. I'm like, I'm falling all the place. Like, what's that all about? I just stood still for 5 minutes on one foot. Now I can't stand up. But yeah, it's all part of the thing. But well, this has been so fun. Thanks for coming to my show.
This was worth the 22-year wait. I just, I had so much fun. I knew it would.
We may have been friends for 22 years in our past lifetime. So we're just catching up on this one. So.
Oh, yeah. No, that's right off the bat. It felt like I'd known you a long time.
Yeah, me too.
It's felt that way.
Yeah, it always has.
It's awesome.
Yeah. And here we go. Continuing on arm in arm into the future.
Right.
So,
well, so where can people find your podcast? This.
We're on Spotify, we're on iTunes, we're on Google Podcasts, we're on, I think, anywhere you get a podcast.
I guess anywhere you can get a podcast.
Yeah, those are the main ones that people listen to, I think, that our channel goes to. But yeah, we're everywhere.
So that's why you asked the questions, because I just asked you a dumb question. Where do you get your podcast?
You have to email me, and then I send you the link. I send you an MP4 to your email, and then you listen to it. No, that's not how it works.
Exactly. One at a time.
Sit down in the morning, and I just email out my MP4s to everyone that wants to hear it. That's how I'm doing it. I don't know how everyone else
does. You're always so busy. I don't know.
Right. I work not smart.
Exactly.
No, that's how it works. But yeah. It's been fun. We had a good time. I think you're episode 20, if I'm not mistaken. So it's kind of a new show. But we're having a good time with it. And we're actually been invited to talk about it on the panel for Sisters in Crime. I think next, it's at the end of the month. So
excellent.
I'm on a panel with a few other podcasters, and we're going to talk about writing and podcasting and stuff. But it's been, I mean, I love it because I've been getting to know, I mean, I know you guys already, but it's just fun to have a one-on-one sort of just chat. And you always learn something new about somebody when you just sit and talk to them.
Mm-hmm. Very, very true. Well, thank you so much for having me. This has been awesome.
You're welcome. And have a great rest of the day. And say hi to Sonia for me.
Will do.
Okay. Enjoy your day. Bye.